and the use of mobile devices for recording is not permitted. Members of the public should not speak during the meeting and may be temporarily excluded for discussion of in-committee items. I remind members of their obligations under the Councillors' Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interests which they have in any item of business before the committee today. If you have such an interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the chamber for the duration of the discussion on that item and should not take part in the vote. You will then be invited back to join the meeting once the discussion on that item is ended. The proceedings of the meeting will be audio and video recorded, except where Council is considering any exempt matters. Members should remember that the microphones work as a queuing system. If your microphone is lit red, you have precedence. Flashing green is next in the queue and then solid green. Please do not press your microphone button again when it is lit up red, as you lose your place in the queue. There may be some members in attendance virtually, and it's been agreed that all members in the chamber are brought in to speak on any issue before any remote delegates. Therefore, if you're attending remotely, please use the chat facility to indicate your wish to speak, and I will bring members in once all those within the chamber have spoken. Instant message to be kept to the following letters. Type Q if you wish to ask a question, C for comment, P if you wish to propose, S if you wish to second. Please refrain from making any comments using instant messaging. Members are reminded that they are personally responsible for any comments they make at the meeting. Thank you. Now, apologies. Have Councillor Finn apology? Any other apologies? No. Okay. Any declarations of interest?
Chair, an item agenda item number 11, and this is I would be on the Peace Plus Partnership and also sit on the overall steering committee and oversight committee of the SEUPB. So at that point, I'll leave the room when that item's been dealt with. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Councillor. You're going to leave the room as well? Okay, thank you. Now we'll go through the action sheet. Let me see. Now, page 11, page 12, and page 13. Is there any matters arising? Councillor Enright?
Picking up on page 3, which is the Enforcement Improvement Plan update. I have the comparisons we had from Liam Dinsmore with North Down here, but when I was looking at the figures, I could see that we've been catching up with by North Down are only three times our figures. But there's a couple of councils which are now getting like 5,000 fines in a year, which if you multiply it by the amount of money you get for fines, would be bringing them up to about £250,000 worth of revenue. Now, what I thought was I'd like to submit this league table to validate the management to validate the figures to see if the Belfast Telegraph are not making it up, see if it's true. Because if councils are able to get 4,000, almost 5,000 and 2,000 fines a year, it would mean the fines would pay for our staff. And I'd like to make that proposal to the Strategic Finance Working Committee that we actually fund more staff by doing whatever it is these councils are doing, if the figures are true. Because if they are true, they're so far away from what other councils are doing, they must be doing something differently and better. So I'd just like to submit that under this item to management to validate the figures and see if they're true before circulating them to the rest of the members.
Yeah, that's okay. Now, I need. You need a second for that, Councillor Enright. We're going to move on now to item 4. Proposer and seconder for the action sheet.
Second, Chair.
Okay, so that's Councillor Andrews and Councillor Campbell. Okay. Now, item 4 is the mid-year assessment of S&E Directive Business Plan, and Sinead Murphy is going to read that out.
Thank you, Chair. This report is for decision. A mid-year assessment of each Directive Business Plan has been undertaken. in order to provide an overview of progress between April and September 2024. I'm taking this report as read, and members are asked to consider and approve the mid-year assessment of the Sustainability and Environment Directorate Business Plan 2024 to 2025, as outlined in Appendix 1. Thank you.
Now, could I get a proposer and a seconder, please? Councillor Andrews, Chair. Propose. And Councillor Jackson, second. Thank you. Now, item 5, powers under Article 4 and 5 of the Waste and Contaminated Land Order. And Sinead Trainor's going to read.
Thank you, Chair. This paper is for decision. The purpose of the report is to inform members of the new enforcement powers to Council to deal with illegal deposits of waste, which we call fly tipping, under Article 4 and 5 of the Waste and Contaminated Land Northern Ireland Order 1997, and to set the associated fixed penalty levels. Under Article 4 and 5 powers, we will be able to usefully add additional regulatory tool for small-scale offending. The penalties for such are far greater than the current penalties that we have under the later Northern Ireland Order 1994. The use of the powers is discretionary and is dependent on the nature and the scale of any incident. Council officers may need to exercise their discretion to determine whether an investigation by Council is appropriate. Members are being asked to approve fixed penalty notices for the offence of illegally depositing waste, contrary to Article 4 of the Order, is set to a maximum of £400, with an early payment option of £300 if paid within 14 days from receipt of the notice. An early payment option for £300 fixed penalty notice for the duty of care offence, contrary to Article 5 of the Order, is set at £200 if paid within 14 days from receipt of the notice. And lastly, that the Director of Sustainability and Environment and the Assistant Director of Environment be authorised to take decisions on behalf of the Council as to when it is appropriate to use the Council's discretionary powers under the Order.
Okay, thank you, Sinead. Councillor Enright.
Yeah, I just get a bit of clarification about the use of these powers, particularly Article 4. I know that in the past, legislation in Northern Ireland has been such that if you find fly tipping of rubbish and you have a whole bunch of addresses, bills, etc., that's tracing back to a particular individual, our officers actually have to go to that individual and almost get them to admit it, because the existence of that rubbish with the identifying information isn't in itself enough to get a prosecution. Whereas in other jurisdictions in these islands, in order to escape prosecution, you have to show that you've reported the theft of your rubbish to the police before you'll be allowed to escape responsibility for it. You know what I mean? So it's quite difficult for our people, our officers, to call around to people's houses and hope that they will own up to the fact that it is their rubbish. Is there anything in the Article 4 or Article 5 that will get around these sorts of obstacles? And is there anything in these powers that will enable us to get on with having cameras in fly tipping hotspots?
Just clarify, it is around issuing fixed penalty notices on the information that you find. So once you issue the fixed penalty notice, then the person needs to, the offence has already been confirmed. What we're saying is that the issue of the fixed penalty notice, that is, the information is confirmed, and therefore... Sorry?
We're only talking about the money that's not...
£400 fine, fixed penalty notice. It's very similar to the letter order that our enforcement officers would be issuing now, only a smaller fine. So this is considerably more. And I suppose dealing with issues, the large scale issues of dumping that we would regularly be investigating across the District Council.
Okay. Is that okay, good? Councillor Taylor.
Yeah, Chair, it's really just a query, I suppose, for us. You know, there are certain black spots in the district that seem to have reoccurring problems for this type issue. And I know myself, even in my own area, there's certain areas where I'm, you know, reporting on a regular basis that are, you know, used as fly tipping spots. And I understand how difficult it can be, obviously, to catch anybody involved in this because of the lack of evidence on maybe regular occasions. But just in terms of the fine itself, the £400, have we done any work in terms of, you know, obviously lifting the cleanup costs that are associated with this type of activity? Was on occasions it can be quite serious in terms of the level of rubbish that's dumped. And sometimes £400 seems, you know, a small price to pay for that type of, you know, crime, in my opinion, and particularly when the cleanup could probably cost maybe a lot more than that. So it's just, I suppose, from our own point of view, have we ever, you know, carried out any research or sort of have an idea as to in terms of the costs, you know, that we incur probably on an annual basis on this? Or, and whilst I understand it depends on the level of rubbish dumped at any given time, but just even the lowest cost and maybe the maximum cost that we have, you know, incurred as a council to clean up a certain spot that's been affected by fly tipping.
Okay, just to say that's something we'll definitely take on board and look, I suppose, in terms of the capacity of that team in terms of small-scale dumping versus large-scale dumping. When we're talking about large-scale, we would talk about in terms of the contents of a bin lorry, and that's where we would come in terms of Article 4 and the size of the amount of waste that would be disposed of.
Yeah, I think that's probably where I think sometimes £400, whilst it seems a large amount, it actually isn't when you consider how serious an issue it is at times, and maybe the cost that we are incurring as a council for something which, you know, people are doing obviously deliberately, and they know themselves, they're probably saving themselves quite a bit of money by doing that in certain spots across the district. So it's just probably if we could get maybe some feedback on that at a future meeting.
Definitely take that on board. Thank you, Councillor Taylor.
Thank you, Councillor. Can I get a proposal in a seconder, please? Councillor Enright. Propose a seconder.
Second.
Second, Councillor Campbell. Yeah. Both, can I just ask you to use the microphones, please? No. Right. Okay. Item 6, update on the review of caravan site licence condition, and Sinead Traynor's going to read that.
Thank you, Chair. This paper is for decision. The purpose of this report is to update elected members on the Environmental Health Section's completed review of the Council's caravan site licence conditions following the report to committee back in April 2024. The Environmental Health Officers have visited and consulted with 25 licensed caravan site owners across the district on the three areas detailed within the report. Under a caravan site opening period, 5 static holiday and touring caravan sites have requested to amend condition 2 on their licence to permit them to open all year round, and they're highlighted in Appendix 1. The total number of caravans and motor caravans on caravan sites have been also updated. And in terms of Area 3, the refuge and recycling arrangements, we have notified that the main challenge is the segregation of food waste at the caravan sites. Members are therefore asked to approve the amendment of Condition 2 of the Static Holiday and Touring Caravan Site Licence Conditions for the 5 sites that have requested the amendment, and should further amendments be requested, they should be actioned accordingly. And secondly, that the Council's recycling officers will focus their resource to educate the caravan site owners and the caravan owners themselves on the importance of waste segregation and recycling. Thank you.
No. Councillor Young.
Hello. Thanks, Sinead. Just some queries on behalf of Councillor Truesdale in relation to this item. I think there's four or five points. I'll just give them all together and then you can come back. In terms of consultation, I think it was potentially only site owners who may have been consulted. How can the site stay open for 12 months of the year and prevent someone using it as the permanent home? There's already a water infrastructure issues in Newcastle and along. Is there capacity for this, and have NI Water been consulted? And in terms of enforcement, how is that going to work when we're struggling with in our towns and villages as it is? And finally, will caravan owners incur any extra cost regardless of whether or not they want 365-day access? Thank you.
Okay, so just to come back on them points. In terms of the Council's responsibility, the Council issues caravan site licences to the caravan site owners. So therefore, they are the ones that we consult with, not the caravan owners on the sites. That would be a very extensive job if we were to consult with all of them. So the Council's Environmental Health Department's responsibility is to consult and enforce the caravan site licence conditions that they have at caravan sites, and therefore that's why the owners of the caravan sites were only consulted. In terms of the caravan sites not ensuring that it's their permanent home, the caravan site owners have residential addresses for the caravan site by the caravan owners. So that's part of, I understand, their lease agreement, that they produce documentation to say that they have a permanent address, and then they will obviously police that. That would not be up to the council to police. In terms of NI water consultation, we haven't done any piece around that. And we will take that on board and look at that in terms of if that is something that needs to be consulted, given what volume of caravan owners would be staying on the properties in January and February, because remember this only relates to weekends in January and February, so that's 4 weekends, 8 weekends in the whole year. It's not an excessive request. And in terms of extra cost, I'm not aware of what the arrangements are on the lease between a caravan site owner and the caravan owners. That's not something that we get involved in. We just deal with the caravan site owners themselves. Thank you.
Any other questions? No. Now, can I get a proposer and a seconder? Seconder? He's all sleeping.
Second, Chair.
So, Councillor O'Hanlon and Councillor Campbell. All right. Now we're ready to go into closed session. Now, I need a proposer and a seconder to go into closed session, please. Councillor Hart.
Close.
And Councillor Jackson. Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, I handed you that. Now, whilst in committee, the following items were agreed. Business case for the removal of Newcastle Sandbar. On the proposal of Councillor Larkin, second by Councillor Campbell, it was agreed to note the contents of the report and associated business case and to approve the preferred option of the business case to progress a tender for the sandbar removal at Newcastle Harbour for a 3-year period from 2025 to 2027 in accordance with the Marine Construction Licence. Repair of Corey's Corner, Drumness Bus Shelter and adoption by Translink. On the proposal of Councillor Andrews, second by Councillor Young, it was agreed to adopt the bus shelter at Corey's Corner and to consider future proposals from Translink regarding the adoption of bus shelters. Business case for deep cleansing services. On the proposal of Councillor Rowan, second by Councillor Campbell, it was agreed to commence the procurement of contract provision of deep cleansing cleaning of public rim and other areas within the district for up to a period of 3 years. Direct award contract approvals and extensions. On the proposal of Councillor Larkin, second by Councillor Rowan, it was agreed to approve the 4 direct award contracts as detailed in the officer's report. Peace Plus funding call for Clean Air. On the proposal of Councillor Young, second by Councillor Larkin, it was agreed to approve the development of a proposal to submit a multi-agency application for Peace Plus funding under Theme 6 investment area from Council as outlined in the officer's report. ARC 21 Joint Committee Members Monthly Bulletin from the 31st of October 2024 and ARC 21 Joint Committee Meeting and Committee Minutes of the 26th of September 2024. On the proposal of Councillor Young, second by Councillor Jackson, it was agreed to note the documents. Can I get a proposal and a seconder, please?
Proposed.
Councillor Andrews.
Second.
And second, Councillor Campbell. No, I should have done this, Chair.
The last 4 items.
Yes, okay. The last 4 items, 13 to 16, are for noting. Is there any queries? Councillor Young.
Thanks, Chair. Just again, on behalf of Councillor Truesdale, in relation to the Christmas illuminations update, she's asked Would it be possible for Anna Long to have a few more Christmas illuminations, especially from Sawhill Park and Shannon Drive on the approach to the village? Is that something that could be considered, please? Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Unfortunately, this year we don't have the capacity to put in additional illuminations in Anna Long. I think in 2023 there were additional illuminations installed in Anna Long. Our thoughts on this is after Christmas we'll take it to the next Destiny working group where we can review this year and then look forward in terms of, you know, do we seek additional funding for new illuminations? We just need to take into consideration the overall costs and the maintenance and electricity costs and revenue costs, which are increasing obviously as time goes on, but unfortunately there's no capacity to do that this year. Thank you.
Can I get a proposer and a seconder, please? Proposer. Councillor Taylor proposed and Councillor Rowan second.
It's everything, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay, folks, that's the meeting finished. Thank you very much. And safe home, everybody, and careful on the roads.
Thank you all.